In Michigan right now, harvest season is in full swing, and that means the work for winemakers has just begun. What do you think of when you think about October at Michigan wineries? I mean, you might be imagining rolling fields of juicy grapes ripe for the picking and people stomping in large barrels full of fruit, the sun shining through a glass of your favorite wine. So romantic, right?
Sure, there are moments that are like that. But typically they're designed for the camera or the radio. And when it comes down to it, winemaking is challenging more often than not. And part of that is just that the people that are doing it are really trying to ensure that the raw material we have is being guided in the way that's going to be best for that raw material to end up really showcasing what it can be in the final product.
This time of year can be a season of chaos for growers, wineries, and distilleries. When it comes down to it, it's all about showcasing the final product, the wine. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today, the delicate and urgent dance of grape harvesting season. Black Star Farms was founded in 1998 by a team of grape growers who were looking to showcase Northwest Michigan's agriculture. The farm partners with vineyards on the Leelanau and Old Mission peninsulas. I stopped by to visit head winemaker Lee Lutz at the Leelanau Vineyard just outside of Traverse City to get a sense of everything a winemaker weathers throughout the fall.
Let's go up to the base of the terrace.
Sure.
This is all Cabernet Franc. This is fruit that won't be harvested for multiple weeks. It's a thick-skinned variety, kind of hangs well late into the year and does well in our climate.
And the sunshine. Can't beat it.
No.
So there was a period in which a lot of wineries and tasting rooms were barely hanging on. Can you describe what consumer demand has been like since Northern Michigan came to this period of being a little bit more open?
You know, I think the COVID period, the really difficult COVID period when things first got underway, was a challenge for everybody because nobody knew for sure what we could or couldn't do in terms of just gathering our employees, pulling together the efforts of the people that we had. Once we put some of those things into place, we took the time to really expand our shipping because we had demand. People still wanted the wines. People still wanted the services that we could offer. Since that time, though, last year was a record year for us. And it was big, I think, because people were just so excited and so enthusiastic to be out and to be doing things other than being cooped up the way they had been. Since then, things have cooled a little bit. But I think the economic situation that we're currently in is part of that as well. You know, we saw gas prices up here that were in excess of $5 a gallon early this summer, this spring, and that certainly didn't help encourage people to think about traveling much. Since then, we've seen patterns that are more typical, more normal. We're actually up a little bit over 18 and 19, not a lot, but a little bit, in those years prior to COVID. And prior to, the issues that kind of held us back. So we're actually feeling pretty good about where we are. You know, there are still people that want to experience what we have to offer. You know, it's just we're in a beautiful place, and that certainly doesn't hurt any of the efforts that go into this.
And we are in a beautiful place as we speak here among the varietals that are used for, I believe you said, reds in this part of the operation?
Well, we're growing mostly reds on this hillside. So this is our estate vineyard at Black Star. We planted this in 1999, one year after we had started our production facility. And so we're mostly growing Pinot Noir here, a little bit of Cabernet Franc, a little bit of Dornfelder, which is a German variety. And then we grow a few whites up at the top of the hill that are primarily used for sparkling wine.
How new is Pinot Noir from Michigan lands?
Pinot Noir is not new. It's actually the largest red variety grown in the state, the largest in volume grown in the state. We happen to be one of the larger producers in Northwest Michigan of Pinot Noir. We're growing in excess of about 30 acres of Pinot up here. We also purchase a little bit of additional fruit from other growers in the area of that variety, because we incorporate it into a beautiful rosé. We, of course, make red wines from it on multiple levels. It goes into our sparkling wines. So we use it in a variety of ways. We actually make a white wine from it as well, which is pretty unique.
Could you give us the layperson's guide to the growing season for the varietals that you work with?
The layperson's guide to the growing season. That's the one thing that keeps those of us in winemaking up here very interested, because there is no textbook response to this. You know, every year is different. And, you know, we've all been, I think, somewhat more positive about the growing seasons we've had lately, because they have lengthened to some extent. We've been starting a little bit earlier. We tend to start with the plants actually pushing bud growth in April, and we can hang fruit well into November as long as the season is relatively kind at the end. You know, as long as there's leaves on the vines will continue to do their thing and ripen fruit. So we have a long growing season. It's just what happens in between those periods. And so if we have an awful lot of rain, if we have overcast skies throughout the summer, it can make ripening fruit very difficult. But this year, 2022, has been spectacular.
We should say it's been 2022 has been an extremely dry year. What does that do to the fruit?
Well, so the berries tend to be a little bit smaller in these drier years. You know, we don't see as much vegetative growth because the plant is not able to make use of all the water that it might possibly want for that vegetative state. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. We actually feel at this point that we've got exceptional fruit quality going into what remains of the harvest, and there's still, you know, we've really just gotten started. So the fruit quality at this point is exceptional. And for young vines, there's an effort to keep those vines irrigated and to keep those vines growing, because it's very important when the vines are first in the ground to ensure that they're getting root system development. So that's really the most important time for water and for a lack of water stress. In a year like this, mature vineyards will still do okay. We still get enough water. But there was certainly a period here up until about 3 weeks ago when the vines looked a little tired. They looked a little depleted. And then we ended up getting about, I don't know, an inch and a half of rain. And since then, they've really come around. They've kind of bounced back and look great again. So the lack of rain also helps with disease management. So keeping things dry, fungal pressure is our biggest issue with growing grapes in Michigan. And having a dry season helps keep that fungal pressure down.
I'm extremely reluctant to talk about weather changes in the same breath with climate changes. However, it's a fact that some growers in the Inland West have had to look at what they're producing with an eye to what is possible now that wasn't possible 30 years ago and what may or may not be possible in the future. Are you in any place to look at, you know, what has been the stock and trade of Black Star and, you know, maybe think about whether you need a different map of grapes on this land?
Well, there's an awful lot of work being done both at Michigan State and by private growers in terms of researching other varieties. An awful lot of that is being done kind of, you know, just with an interest of possibilities in mind. You know, there wasn't an awful lot of red fruit actually being grown up here when I first got back into the industry 30 years ago. And since then, you know, I think in part because of the changing climate and, you know, some of these warmer seasons, more and more growers have been comfortable planting some of these varieties. So we've already seen that shift. You know, you hear people saying every now and then that Michigan is going to become the new Napa, and certainly that's not going to be the case. I think at least in our lifetimes and in more than likely in the next generation's lifetime, we may continue to see the evolution of some interesting new varieties. But what's really of interest to some of us is looking at varieties that can grow in this climate and not require quite the inputs in the way of pesticides, herbicides, things of that nature. We're all trying to do more in the way of sustainable growing. because we know how delicate some of our ecosystems are, and really working towards protecting what we have here in Northwest Michigan, what makes this area so special, and trying to make sure that it's being maintained for the future. So an awful lot of that research is being done in other countries that have a lengthy history well ahead of our own. There was a group of us that went to Germany now about 5 years ago to kind of look at some of these varieties. And some of them have now cleared customs, cleared quarantine. And so they're actually being propagated to look at wider plantings here in Michigan.
We need to take a little break. After that, another challenge for Michigan wineries, finding workers. We'll be right back.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside Podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Lee, this business sits at the intersection of agriculture and, to some extent, the service industry. Everybody's talking about, you know, trying to find the people they need to run their operations. What's it been like for you this year?
Well, we've been fortunate in a lot of ways because we have people that are passionate. We have people that care about what they're doing. You know, what we've had to do is look at ways to accommodate some of the special needs of people. There are people that have family needs. There are people that have special circumstances that may require something other than what's been typical in terms of scheduling. And so through our flexibility to some extent, we've been able to accommodate most of those interests. But when you have people that love what they do and want to be a part of an industry like this, it makes it so much easier. And that's really what we've always tried to have with us in our production facilities and in our tasting rooms and in our hospitality, is people that love it. Now, that said, it's still a challenge.
Well, what does flexibility look like? The grapes are ready when they're ready, and the visitors come when they come, to a certain extent, right?
Well, that's very true. We've probably had more of a challenge on the front side of the business with our service staff in the tasting rooms, our service staff in events, our service staff in our restaurants. In an area like this, where we have an industry like that that's expanding the way it is, you know, we have a number of new restaurants up here. We have a number of new event centers in the area. So there's more demand. We've had to push our compensation a little bit. You know, we've had to get creative in ways that will attract some of those people. For example, in the tasting room, we're going to more scheduled tastings and more, I don't want to say, by appointment or reservation tastings, but things along that line where we're asking people to call ahead if they have special needs, if they're a larger group. In the past, we had our doors open and everybody was welcome. We just don't quite have the staff to accommodate that format any longer. And people, our service staff is not necessarily as comfortable with that format in the way that they used to be.
The crowds. I mean, I think everybody feels a little differently now about being in a crowd than they did before.
Most definitely. Most definitely. And in the past, we were all working off a model that said, if we get people to taste our wine, they'll find something they'll like and they'll support us with a purchase. Now it's more about spending some time with people to help them appreciate the experience and appreciate what goes into some of these wines, and try to really nurture a relationship that is more supportive of a long-term relationship rather than a one-day purchase or a one-day visit. We find our greatest joy in the return of people on a regular basis. And so much of what we see at the inn, so much of what we see at the tasting room, is people that come back to see us year after year, if not week after week or month after month.
any special challenges to the operation in terms of supply chain? I've heard so many weird stories about everything from packaging labels to shipping to even just, I know a perfumer who's having trouble getting bottles. What's it like trying to get a crate of wine bottles together these days?
Well, you hit it right on the head. That was going to be my number one. You know, there's a number of glass plants that existed in Eastern Europe prior to the conflict over there. And some of those glass plants no longer exist. And so we've heard of other wineries that had glass in those facilities that had to take a complete loss and were not able to get glass for a particular product. We work with a very good supplier. I've actually been lining up my purchases this week for next year's wines. We have to work that far in advance, and so that they can try to source those things and have them lined up. We've had to make advanced purchases on some of that glassware. It is definitely a challenge, and it's a challenge across the board because everything is coming, for the most part, coming in from Europe in the way of glass, corks, not so much labels, but an awful lot of the packaging. But generally, people understand that we, you know, talk about these kinds of things. We'd understand that, you know, some of these things are beyond our control, and, you know, we're doing what we can.
I think folks know what the front of the house experience will be like in the coming weeks during harvest season, but tell us what's going to be going on in production between now and, say, the end of October.
Well, this is a time that both the winemakers love and to some extent they know is going to be a challenge enough that they put their lives on hold. You know, most of us in this industry just kind of put our lives on hold. I say I don't commit to anything between September 15th and November 15th because anything can happen in that time period. But we'll be getting into 7-day work weeks here very soon. We're not quite there. But, you know, the crew, again, when people love what they do, they understand that this is that time of the year. They make opportunities for vacations. They make opportunities for family getaways and things of that nature at other times. And we have a committed crew, but it'll be long days. It'll be some cold and wet conditions. You know, I think there's a romantic perspective that winemaking, you know, just carries with it inherently. People have this image of people stomping grapes in their bare feet and
in sunny fields,
and it's, you know, just being celebratory, and sure, there are moments that are like that, but typically they're designed for the camera or the radio, and when it comes down to it, winemaking is challenging more often than not, and part of that is just that the people that are doing it are really trying to ensure that the raw material we have is being guided in the way that's going to be best for that raw material to end up really showcasing what it can be in the final product. So oftentimes things have to happen in a very timely manner. Any raw material is going to start to spoil the minute it comes off the vine or off the plant. So we have to move on it fairly quickly. And there's definitely a sense of urgency that goes into most of this.
So we're standing here amidst what really looks like a bounty of gorgeous looking fruit. Can I trust my eyes here that this is tentatively looking like a good harvest?
At this stage, you know, usually we have a pretty good sense of what we're looking at. We're getting off to the start of the harvest on a very good lead in that the fruit looks almost ideal at this point. You know, we always talk about the fact that September needs to be kind and October needs to be gentle in order for us to have the kind of real harvest that we want to have. You know, for the most part, our Northern Michigan summers are beneficial enough for the fruit. But at this point, things look beautiful. And as long as we have an October that doesn't throw us too many curveballs in the way of rainstorms or, you know, God forbid, an early frost, it's going to be another beautiful year. That said as well, for the people that are out there that are thinking about joining us, coming up to Northwest Michigan just to visit the wineries, there are spectacular wines right now in the bottle. The 19 vintage, the 20 vintage, the 21 wines, they're all beautiful and showing really, really well. And so it's a great time. It's a great time to visit the wineries. It's a great time to get out. I mean, here we are standing in the vineyards. The sun is shining. We had a little bit of rain earlier, but It's a beautiful time to be in our area, and we're blessed to be here and be a part of it all.
Lee Lutz of Black Star Farms, thank you so much for just taking a few precious minutes to talk to us in the midst of all this mayhem.
Of course. I'm happy to do it. Thank you.
That's the Stateside Podcast for today. I'm April Baer. You can find full Stateside episodes whenever you're ready for more listens. We had a great one recently from a local apple orchard that I think you'd enjoy a lot. Find it at michiganradio.org. Today's pod was produced by Mercedes Mejia. Other producers on our show are Mike Blank, Ronia Cabansag, and April Van Buren. Our podcast editor is Rachel Ishikawa. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Music for the pod comes from Blue Dot Sessions. Thank you so much for listening today. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.